to me, you never know. We think, well, I can't talk to that person, or, you know, I could never get to that person. But when God is working in somebody's heart, He uses us to be the instruments in taking the gospel to them. And it might be the most unsuspecting person you think you could never reach for Him. To me, it's a blessing.
For 2,000 years, Christ has been extending His kingdom through ordinary, faithful people. Their blood, sweat, and tears are the seeds of the global church. The gospel is spreading across the world, saving sinners, renewing nations, and changing everything. But today, many in the modern church are weak, torn, comfortable. The book of Hebrews says we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, watching us from heaven, spurring us on. The stories of these faithful Christ followers who've gone before us are what we need to wake up and return to our first love for Christ's mission. Let's learn from them.
On this week's episode of Cloud of Witnesses, we begin the first of a two-part story featuring missionaries Paul and Patty Collier. Their story marks the final two episodes of the Cloud of Witnesses podcast series, at least for now. Paul and Patty served with AVWE for 35 years, first in Paraguay and later in Costa Rica, serving God faithfully through every season of ministry.
Hi, I'm Paul, and this is my wife, Patty Collier, and we're just really excited that we have the privilege of sharing our story of our life working in Paraguay and Costa Rica, and now we working in Palmetto, Florida. But this is a real blessing for us. And well, I'm going to share where I began. It's really interesting. Patty and I both were born in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I was born in Chester, Pennsylvania. Patty was born in Westchester. We met in Tennessee, which is unusual and wild. But I grew up in the very southeast corner of Pennsylvania, 17 miles from Philadelphia, to a wonderful family. My dad and my mom were wonderful. They loved each other. And they took us to church every time the door was open. We were Bible Presbyterians in Chester. And I heard the gospel all my life. I went to Bible school that lasted 5 weeks every year, and it was 5 weeks of memorization. So they don't have too many of those Bible schools anymore. But I had a very good background, and I had a lot of knowledge. But then I went to college, and that was the problem. I got away from my background. I got away from some of my friends that were not that good when I was in high school, and it got pretty bad. But not telling a lot of the details, I remember in September of 1971, I was coming back to my last year of college. This is in Harrisonburg, Virginia, James Madison College. And I was really having a struggle for a lot of stuff. I was really, really low with a lot of things. I was just really lost. And somebody invited me to a Bible study. I was 21. I was 22, I'm sorry, at that time. And it was amazing. I decided to go, but I did something that I didn't want to go by myself. So my sister was on the same campus. We both living on the campus in Virginia, and I invited her. So I went in, and I was hoping there'd be about 300 people there. Because with 300 people, you know, you can kind of get lost in the crowd. Well, there were 14 people sitting around in a circle. So here we were sitting around the circle, and it was really good. I enjoyed it. And all of a sudden, they started going around the circle, everybody telling their testimony. And I was just sweating because I thought, what am I going to say? What could I possibly say? And I remember when it got to my sister was rest before me, and she says, I just gave my life to Christ 2 weeks ago. And so that was even made me harder to know what to say. And then I said, when I was 7 years old, I raised my hand in summer Bible school. I don't think anybody there nor God was very impressed by that explanation. Well, God convicted me in that very moment. I went back to my dormitory, and I lived in the worst dormitory on campus. It was the animal dormitory. And I went back, and it was interesting. No one was there. None of my friends were there. None of my my suite mates and my roommate was there, and I got on my knees at my side of my bed, and I wept and I cried, and the gospel came back to my heart. I remember every word of it, and I got saved that night, September 27th, 1971, and my life was totally turned around. And I'll never forget, there was a group of us Christians that got into a very, not a very good movement. I mean, we were seeing leggy stenches and speaking in tongues, and we were seeing all this and awful doctrine of everything.
Back in the Jesus movement.
Yeah, it was in the Jesus day, Jesus movement days. And then we said, we've got to find a church. There were about seven of us, and my sister was one of them. And we went to several churches. Then one day, we decided we were going to go to this little Baptist church. It was down the street, and we went. And we went in there, and I looked kind of, I was a mess. I went in and I had sandals, and I know I looked like a mess, but what was interesting, that church was a very conservative church, and not one person looked at me cross-eyed or gasped or whatever. And at the invitation, it was really something. Both my sister and I didn't even see her. She was on the other side of the road. We both went forward for baptism, and we were baptized there a month later there. And I grew like a weed in the Lord. And as Patty said about missionary conferences, I went to a missionary conference in March of 1972. I had a lot of exams that week, but so I said, I'm going to go to this missionary conference every single night. I went, and there was a missionary from Puerto Rico, and
Hernan
Cortez. And I my heart just broke to see those slides of his people in Puerto Rico. And from there, I knew God wanted me in the mission field. And that's when God used the assistant pastor to tell me about Tennessee Temple, the seminary. I was going to go to the seminary. And I was involved in all kinds of ministries. I learned everything imaginable. I worked in the bus ministry, which they decided to give me the hardest bus route. That was 17 miles from the church, and we had to give the kids lunch because they got home late. But it was a wonderful experience. I got to Tennessee Temple, and I'll never forget. The first Wednesday night, it was a huge church, 30,000 members in all kinds of annexes, and I was in a prayer meeting that first week we were there. And the guy that I was sitting with, I met in the dormitory. He introduced me to Patty, and the first thing I did was showed her a picture of my fiance, and that didn't go over real well. But anyway, we found out we were both the same age. We were both from the same area, and that was what God used to eventually. I fell in love with Patty because she wanted to be sure. She didn't want to make a mistake.
No.
And
put you on file. I went home that night and I prayed, Lord, he's my age. He's going to the mission field. If he's for me, just help me see it through.
Now we hear from Patty as she shares how a foundation of prayer helped shape her heart and ultimately lead her into missions.
Prayer has played a big role in my life as a missionary. I come from a long heritage of godly people that some I never met, that I was told about, and others I remember very well. And what I have is very good and fond memories of these dear godly people. They were farmers, but one was a circuit rider preacher through the mountains of North Carolina, West Virginia, and Virginia. And his name was Granville Howe. And I'll share with him in just a moment. What you need to know is you need to pray for the children and the nephews and nieces in your family, because God has a purpose for each and every one of us. And if you've been blessed with kids and teenagers, though they might not seem to be what God would use, God has a real good sense of humor. And he likes to take people who are unusual and unworthy to do great things for his honor and glory. So, I'm one of those people I was a shy little girl. And I remember out of all the babysitters in West Point, Maryland, my parents picked Cookie. And that's not a real name. That was a pet name that her parents gave her because I guess she ate a lot of cookies. But she did more than that in my life. She asked my parents if she could take us on her church bus to this big Baptist church where I was able to hear as a sunbeam missionary stories told about a little child in this place or that place or the other place. They all had different names, but who would go and tell them about Jesus? And God started to put seeds in my heart for his calling on my life, even before I was born again. And then we moved to the county, and I thought, well, that's the end of that. But this strange man drove up to our house, and he wanted to take my sister and I on his church bus to another little Baptist church in Baltimore County. I grew up in Maryland, so that the nice thing about him was he was very inviting and caring. And at that VBS, God put me on the hot seat. And they had a Bible lesson and a missionary story every day, along with the Kool-Aid and cookies. And what I was able to hear was another bout of stories about places where God was working. And God started working in my heart. Well, that was the week that God saved me, because the pastor came into the classroom and said, all you children who want to know more about Jesus and would like to be born again, follow me. So we sat on the very first row, because I had been curious about that before, but I was too shy to walk down a long aisle. So there I was on the very first bench. And I prayed that day that Jesus would save me. So that's that. Now I was his, and he started really honing down on me. I think when God wants you to do something, he doesn't let up. So be forewarned. He's loving and caring, but he cares enough about the people that he has purposed in your life to lead on. So that when I went to Tennessee Temple before I left, an old missionary showed up at our church and asked, I'm retiring now, who will take my place? And that's where I knew, Lord, I'm going to take somebody's place, or I'm going to make a place somewhere that someone else will take. Just lead my life. And then on the day before I left, my mother shared with me how my grandfather, the circuit rider preacher, told her, these two little girls, Patty and Sharon, my sister, are sweet. And he put his large hand, he was 7 foot tall to me, but he's probably 6'10". But his large hand on my head, and he said, this one, Edith, my mother, be careful with this one. God has a purpose for her life. I don't want to cry on this video, but I was able to leave for Tennessee Temple after studying 2 years at Towson State in Maryland. I transferred and went down there to prepare for the mission field, knowing that I had been chosen. And I had a responsibility to that, my great-grandfather. So that while I was at Temple, I was at missionary conferences. They had a whole week-long missionary conference. Pastors, if you're seeing this, consider doing that. Because that's how God speaks to young people. Seeing missionaries tell their stories at the tables where they have all those neat curios. so that I was prepared to go to the mission field, and that's where God provided my husband.
After choosing to join ABWE, the Colliers had already determined that they wanted to go to Paraguay, and within just 9 months, they had raised their full support and prepared to leave for language school. During that season, the Lord also blessed them with two sons who would soon accompany them to the field. And now we pick up their story as they arrive in Paraguay.
The first day we got to Paraguay, we flew in from Philadelphia to Miami, took a flight to Bolivia, from Bolivia to Paraguay, and we got there late in the afternoon, and we stepped off the plane, and I don't think I remember heat as much as that day. But what was interesting, here we had two strollers, because we had two infants, and we're pushing along, and we could barely push it because the asphalt was melting. And all of a sudden, these two guys come in these orange jumpsuits, and they grab our kids in the strollers and took off with them. And Patty says, well, here it is. We haven't even stepped on, and they've already stolen our children. And what it was, they got the babies under the shade. They were just baggage people. So we got over to, and there was signs for us there and everything. And we get in, and then my wife went in this car with the boys and our stuff. And one of the missionaries thought, Paul would love to ride a motorcycle, you know, ride on a motorcycle from the airport to where we're going. I hate motorcycles. So you can imagine me, the first time I've ever been in Paraguay, the traffic is horrendous. It's 900 degrees, and I'm on this motorcycle hanging on for dear life. We get to the house. Timothy is 18 months and Joel is 3 months old. Joel is suffering from, I mean, not Joel, Benjamin is 3 months old, and he's suffering from third degree diaper rash. He's in agony. Well, Tim decides he's going to go down and explore, you know, the motorcycle that we had just gotten off of, and he burns his leg bad. Okay. So we had to go out all the, and we were wrapping him. He's crying. The baby's crying. And then they had this banquet that you can imagine our hunger at that time. We didn't want to eat for anything. Well, then we were going to the house at this Greenslades were in town for a little while, helping our field council, Ivor Greenslade and his wife and two of their girls. And the Greenslades took off to go back to Peru, and the girls were there at the house. Well, and they're used to heat when they were in Peru. So here it is, it's like a bunker with this flat cement roof, no air conditioning. We're all dying. And all of a sudden there's these missionaries showed up, and they put in a little tiny air conditioner in one of the windows, and it started pouring rain, and we were able to sleep through the night because of this little air conditioner. And I said, they'll turn them off, says, welcome to Paraguay. But it was just those type of things. But the thing is, you know, we just realized that those type of things that we'd have to work through. But it was interesting. But our children survived. And so did we. Our first church plant was in Lombardé, which was on the outskirts of Asunción. It was a hard work, but absolutely wonderful work that we saw. Just absolutely wonderful things happen, and wonderful trophies of grace. And then God led us to a work downtown in Asunción. We took over a work of a missionary that was leaving the field, and there were about 50 folks, and it grew rapidly. And we built a building, and we had built a building the first work too, and we left that first work with a wonderful pastor, and God would just really bless what we did, and it was not our, it was we it was just we were just ordinary people giving our lives to the Lord.
The work of a missionary wife often extends far beyond what can be seen. Supporting her family, building relationships, adapting to new cultures, and quietly strengthening the ministry in countless ways. Her role is woven into every part of the work, often providing the stability and care that make long-term missions possible at all. Anyone with a good wife knows that's the case. Patty now shares her own experience of living and serving in Paraguay and providing this vital ministry.
And what I was involved in while we were there was a lot of ladies' ministry and children's ministry, teaching God's word. And our boys went, I homeschooled them for a while until they finally went off to the English school, and Joel went with them. He skipped second grade, went from first grade to third grade. Don't ask me why. That's how schools can be sometimes. But I remember one day he fell asleep on the bus going home. The boys must have stayed for basketball or something. And the driver said, hello, Sonny. Joel told me he woke him up and said, hello, Sonny. Where do you live? And all he knew to say was, I live near the soccer field. So there was only one in Sahonia right there where we were living. So he took Joel until he said, that street, and he got himself home. Missionaries are very resourceful. Missionary kids are more resourceful than their parents ever dreamt to be. So just remember, you can take your kids to the field and they'll swim away if they can.
As believers in Christ, we're all entrusted with the calling to share the good news, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with those around us. For Paul, this meant reaching beyond the walls of the church and into the lives of the people in the community. He shares one such story that highlights the transforming power of Christ in the life of a man he met outside the church.
I'm going to share one of the Being Jesus moments in Paraguay that I think is an incredible blessing. Our second ministry in Paraguay was in Asunción, downtown. It was a New Life church. And some of the girls in our church, they said, hey, pastor, do you know that there's a new gym up here? And it's really nice and it's a good place. And I thought, yeah, I need to go. Maybe that's why they told me, because maybe I needed to go. So one morning, I'm an early riser, so I got up early and I got there at 6 o'clock. And as I was arriving, this huge, muscly guy comes out and this girl's leaving. And I just, you know, I thought, well, I wonder what this is going on here. And so I met Orlando Martinez. Orlando Martinez was Peruvian. And him and his sister and his brother-in-law left Peru in the 90s, which we reached a lot of Peruvians in those days when the times in Peru were so difficult and so many people had to leave Peru. And they opened a gym. Orlando was 18 years old. He had been Mr. Teen Peru in bodybuilding, and he was full of himself. He was egotistical. He was a womanizer and just thought he was a man's gift to every woman. So it was a real, to me, it was an incredible relationship that was I established with him, friendship. And for a long time, we talked about the Lord. And a long time, I just was trying to be what I should be to him and in the Lord. And he finally started coming to church on Sunday mornings. And he came, I'll never forget the day he came when he surrendered his life to Christ. And a lot of people have been praying for him through that whole time in the church. And Orlando accepted the Lord, and that was back in the 1990s. And to this day, he's still serving the Lord. He has a wife, a number of children, and he works full-time in one of the churches in Paraguay. But you never know. You never know. We think, well, I can't talk to that person, or, you know, I could never get to that person. But when God is working somebody's heart, He uses us to be the instruments in taking the gospel to them. And it might be the most unsuspecting person you think you could never reach for him. To me, it's a blessing. Another story about Paraguay was a miracle. This also happened in the 90s. So we still had our little Suzuki Fronte, which is a little car. We bought a brand new when we got there in 1979. It was a two-stroke engine car. I know that sounds like we were driving around on a lawnmower, but it was actually a vehicle. And we were going out into the countryside for a funeral. And Paraguay is still, I mean, it became the least populated country with evangelicals. Only 6% of Paraguay is evangelical. They even have surpassed Uruguay, which used to be very atheistic, but many people have come to know the Lord in Uruguay. So the evangelical population is very small in Paraguay and very, very Roman Catholic. And we went out to a funeral way out in the campo, out in the interior of the country. We parked our car. It was at a cemetery. We went in, and we knew what persecution was, but this day it came very close to us. We were leaving. We came back closer into town where we lived. We were in another town called Luque, which is the suburbs of Asunción. We were in downtown traffic, and all of a sudden I heard this noise, and there goes our wheel, taking off down the road. And we lost a wheel. I mean, a wheel. I mean, the whole thing, the base and everything. Well, we're stopped there, and I say, God, what are we going to do? Lo and behold, a motorcycle pulled up next to us. And it was one of our members from our church in another city, way over, but he was behind us. And he found it, he got it. He found a couple of lug nuts that were still around. And he put the car back on and he left. And to me, what is interesting is that his name is Angel, Angel. He was our angel that day, Angel. But what we found out is that people knew that it was an evangelical funeral, and they were undoing lug nuts on cars, you know, enough that they'd still be on. But I think I was the only one that lost a tire. But that was one thing. But the thing that how is it possible that Angel was behind us in a city long ways from where he was from?
Patty shares now another remarkable story of Christ's transforming power, this time in the life of a man known in the community for his struggles with alcohol.
I used to sing. I was in special music, which means I'm sure others could sing, but I got voted in. And we decided to invite our pastor that we had when we were in language school at Urumex. And he came, Valente came, and stayed with us. And he, right across the street from the church building we had rented for our new work, we built a platform out in the field, and he preached and I sang special music, and we had a week-long of evangelistic meetings. And people came forward, but one special couple, he ended up being a deacon in our church, and his sweet wife, they were really sweet. And they brought their brother-in-law with them, Braulio. He had cerebral palsy, it seemed, but he just struggled to come forward. And Paul talked with him in Spanish, and comes to find out Braulio's only understood Guarani, but somehow God did a miracle and helped him understand the gospel that Paul shared with him, because he prayed with Paul that night to be born again. Braulio did. His brother and sister-in-law had already been born again. Braulio was a town drunk, not far from where our church plant was, and he was the bane of the whole neighborhood. But he had an overnight experience with Jesus. And till his dying day, because he died not long ago.
Right.
2 years ago, yes. He was the first one there before even the missionaries showed up at the front door. Every time the door
was meant to be opened. Never had a key, but he stood there on the porch and greeted people when they showed up. And now he's in heaven, dancing around, happy to be with Jesus. So the trophies you might have might always be shiny and perfect people. But I thank God for people who aren't perfect, because he chose me to serve him. And I've had a wonderful life. No doubt, I struggle with Parkinson's, but I'm happy to know that I'm getting, one day soon, I'll meet my Jesus. And I will have lived a good life with no regrets.
The story of Paul and Patty Collier is one marked by steadfast commitment and faithful service to the Lord among the people he placed in their care. Their ministry began in Paraguay, where they poured their lives into church planting, discipleship, and community outreach. Yet their journey was far from over. As we'll hear in the next episode, God would lead them into a new chapter of ministry in Costa Rica, opening fresh doors of opportunity to teach, train, and invest in future leaders. So stay tuned for part two, the final episode of season three of Cloud of Witnesses. Cloud of Witnesses is a production of ABWE. I'm your host, Alex Kochman. Our production director is Grant Boring. Our researcher and interviewer is Jay York. Production support is provided by Brian Van Timmeren. Additional voiceovers by Jason Younger. Get equipped to make disciples and learn more about how you can reach the nations at abwe.org.
Cloud of Witnesses is a production of ABWE. ABWE is a global family of ministries reaching more than 80 countries by sharing Christ, planting churches, and training Christian leaders. After nearly 100 years, ABWE is continuing to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. You can help us advance the kingdom for the next 100 years and beyond by supporting the mission through the Global Gospel Fund. Learn more at abwe.org/cloud.